Welcome back to the backstretch at Saratoga Race Course for another in our summer series of conversations and discussions about this 2019 Saratoga Race Meeting. I'm Tom Amello, and I've invited my good friend and professional handicapper Michael Kipnis, the Wizard, to join us for a second time this meeting. Give him an opportunity to have a conversation about the meet in general. There have been several changes, obviously. We opened in early July. There's no more Monday racing. We have two dark days. There have been certainly a sense of positiveness to the change and also a sense of concern or negative feedback. And I thought I'd give Michael a chance from a handicapping standpoint to deal with that. And as we sit here on Wednesday of Travers Week, we've suffered through another monsoon morning in Saratoga. If you don't like the weather, folks, in Saratoga, just wait 5 minutes, it'll change. And we've had that kind of Wednesday morning here in and around the general area. All races have been taken off the turf. You know, by the time you listen to this podcast, you will have known that. They've canceled the opening jump race, and so post time will be second race around 1:30. A change to everybody's day. And days like today are frustrating for people who have to handicap early rather than arrive at the track and begin to work your way through the card the way it's going to be that day. But it is what it is, and that's how we'll attack it. So I want to welcome Michael Kipnis back. Michael, welcome back. And let's start off talking about your feeling about the change in the meeting, the early opening, the two dark days, and the how you feel about that. How's it going for you?
Well, I like the early opening because I sell more seats because it's Saratoga. You know, that's number one. I also really like the five-day-a-week schedule because it's, you know, it's hard work for everybody, and it's nice to have a couple days off. You know, we never, as you know, just publish a sheet yourself and you run a B&B and you work hard yourself. It's you need that extra day. And so I like that. So, you know, in general, I don't know I think it would be better to go to Thursday through Monday rather than Wednesday through Sunday.
So why do you feel that way, Michael? What's your basis for that?
Well, I think there are a lot of people take off on Monday. I mean, there's, you know, I know there's some businesses that take off, don't, you know, run on Monday, like hairdressers, hairstylists shut down. I don't know about restaurants, but it just seems like you could take a longer weekend. You can take a Monday off. And I'm not sure you would have more of a pulse on the business side of it up there, what people are saying. But I would say that the general consensus would be that it would be better to run a Thursday through Monday. But that's just a guess on my part. But I would have probably, just by gut, that's what I would have done, run the 5 days Thursday to Monday.
Tell me, would you ever like to see it seriously expanded beyond this mid-July opening to a July 4th? Obviously, you're comfortable with the 5 days.
Yeah, I think there's a very careful line you're riding, you know, when you extend a meet like Saratoga, which, you know, if you think about it, it's not like the old days. It'll never be like the old days when you had 5-day-a-week racing and you had 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was a boutique meet. You know, it was better racing packed into a shorter period of time. And, you know, I love that. But it's far from that now. And so it doesn't really matter you know, if they extended it another week, it wouldn't change the feel of what it's like now to what it was like back then. You know, it would just be, you know, more racing up at Saratoga,
right.
You know, more interest. No matter what, you can extend it 2 months, and you're going to have more business and more interest at Saratoga. It's just that the racing, the quality of racing,
right,
is it's never going to be what it was, but it's not going to be much different than if you ran it at Belmont. You know, it's just that it's Saratoga. The problem with extending it another week is it's very hard for people to move up there and find living arrangements and the cost of it.
Well,
I'm
just going to offer this. I agree with you on that. I've always felt that there are the logistics of housing and relocating was the essential problem to be solved. But I don't see that there's a significant difference from what it took to get people housed for this extension to go beyond. So as far as I'm concerned, they're halfway there. I think you're absolutely right about the fact that what once was will never be, because the context for racing has changed. That's number one. And the other thing, an extension or an early opening, to a certain degree, gives more people who become interested in racing an opportunity to come to Saratoga, if you will. You know, we didn't expand the days, the number of racing days, we just expanded the time in which the event takes place. And there are some folks, and you know, you mentioned the fact that we run our inn. I'm surprised, and pleasantly surprised, at the number of folks who arrived somewhat surprised and somewhat miffed that they were gonna lose a day of racing, but who managed to enjoy themselves here in Saratoga and expand their area experience outside of the track and actually do some track-related things. They visited some of the horse farms in the area. They spent more time at the museum, if you will, and enjoyed the historic aspect of the area. So there's been certain benefits. We don't know what it's going to be in the future, and the only thing I hope is that the New York Racing Association and the state of New York make the decision significantly before January 1st. That's all. Michael, let's talk about handicapping the meet. You know, we handicap every race. The public doesn't have to do that. Let's talk about the racing. Any young horses that you've been impressed by? You know, this is the maiden breaking capital of the world, if you will.
Yeah, there've been a couple horses that won. One was, I think, in the Sanford. It was trained by Eddie Keneally, shipped up from Churchill Downs.
Yes,
and won. And I liked the way the horse did it. That was opening weekend. That was a horse named By Your Side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that one comes to mind. You know, I'm not good with remembering names too much. You know, that's what happens when you're 62 and you just don't remember everything like that unless
you
burn your
nose. You're getting old. I didn't mean to throw you a curve, but It is where some trainers, some owners, save their runners for a debut here.
I must say that I am really surprised once again that Todd Pletcher is not represented by any 2-year-old. And you know, I don't even I think he's won one or two with maiden claimers. I mean, when I look back on that, and I talked a lot about that the last 2 years. You know, I was saying that, you know, that what is happening with him? You know, he always was represented in any of these two-year-old races, the Adirondack, the Sanford, the Hopeful. He'd always have a major player. You know, he's kind of evaporated into thin air.
Just to provide some context, I took a look at the stats through Formulator, which are not 100% up to date, if you will. Just tracking Chad Brown's ascendancy, if you will, and Tom Pletcher's regression. You know, if he was a horse, and you were doing a Thoroughgraph or a Raggers and Sheep. He's certainly well off his tops and running off races, if you will. And about 5 years ago, Chad ran about 785, had, for the last 5 years, Chad had 785 starts and Todd had 731. So they're about even. But as we've come these last 5 years, Chad Brown's actually run more horses, one at a higher percentage, and his in-the-money percentage is greater than Todd's. As we sit here right now, the standings have Chad with 123 starts, 25 wins, and 65% in the money, and Pletcher is actually second in the standings with 12 wins, 84 starts, 49% in the money. But as you pointed out, several of those wins have come with horses, very expensive horses, dropping down into the maiden claiming ranks. I think three of his 12 wins are that way.
Well, I don't recall. He won a race over the weekend with in a maiden 75 claimer.
Yep.
And the horse was 7-1. And the horse won. But I don't even recall when horses of his that have been dead on the board are winning, which makes him extremely unpredictable. He had a horse also last weekend that cost over $1 million. And I don't think that horse could have won a maiden five at Finger Lakes the way the horse ran.
Or that and, candy you know, something or other, right?
Yeah, it was dead last. And it was bet hard. And, you know, it was, I think, co-favorite. And, you know, it was terrible. So he's become extremely unpredictable. And, you know, and then you have, on the other hand, you have Chad Brown that, and I don't blame Chad Brown. I don't think him good horseman. He gets a lot of horses, and, you know, but it's not good for the game because he dominates so much that no one really has a chance. You know, he'll run 1, 2, 3 in some of these turf races.
Yeah.
Right? Like there'll be six horses in the race or seven and he's got three or four. And, you know, what was so glaring to me was when I did the Arlington Million Day card. And, you know, Arlington Million, the Beverly D, Secretariat, Arlington Million, the Pucker Up, those all every year they've always been competitive. Full field, Europeans, you know, very competitive, prices along the way. And, you know, I'm not going to pick favorites in every race. I'm going to look to try to beat some of these horses that are very short prices and hoping that I, you know, catch a break somewhere along the line. On Arlington Million Day, the late pick four, right, all graded stakes races. You know, Chad Brown won all four races, and the pick four for 50 cents was $27. And if you think about it, $27, four stakes races, fields of 10 or more, right?
Yep.
$27.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not good for the game because it's not good for bettors. And it's only good for Chad Brown, the owners, and the riders.
Well, let me ask you this, Michael. Yeah, you're a horseman. You've owned horses. You read condition books. You look for spots to run your horses. Horses are in and out of form cycles, so they really only have X number of races when you can predict that they're in a peaking mode. And if you're going to face two or three or more Chad Brown horses in the same race, why enter?
Well, that's what, right. And he has so many turf horses that he has reserved, you know, like bullpen horses that he can slot anywhere.
Yeah.
And he'll find the spot. And the thing is, it's not just one horse, Tom. He'll dominate the field. If he feels he has three or four horses he can enter for that spot, he'll enter them.
Now,
so you have no shot if you're an opponent.
Yeah. Well, what I want to say is that on the one hand, we're talking about the impact of this ability and this strategy. On the other hand, there's nothing illegal. There's nothing wrong. He's got owners. He's got good horses. He's got to find places to run them. And you know, one would have to believe that he's keeping his owners happy, even the ones who are non-winning.
Yeah. And what do you do? I mean, you know, and like I said earlier, I don't blame them.
Right.
I don't blame Chad Brown. I mean, God bless him. I mean, we've never seen anything like it. But I'm talking about, is it good for the game? Is it good for the game? And that means, is it good for the bettors?
That's right.
You know, and the bettors are the ones that drive the game. So it's sort of like a multi-layer trickle-down effect. And then you have all these other good horsemen that cannot compete. They don't have the stock. If you're going to have a horse, you know, if you're going to be an owner and you're going to pay a lot of money for turf horses, you're going to call up Chad Brown, right?
Yeah.
That because he wins. So his success builds on success, but it also, you know, it also affects everybody else on many levels.
Okay, Michael, let's shift and let's talk about the upcoming Travers Stakes. They had the draw on Tuesday night. We've got a full field of 12. And I think there's a fair amount to talk about here. Let's start, and we'll do them in morning line order, if you will. Let's start with the 6, Tacitus. Now, David Aragona makes the line for the New York Racing Association. I think he does an excellent job of it. He installed Tacitus at 5-2. Now, Tacitus is entering the race off that poor start, strong finish in the Jim Dandy. And we've learned that Billy Mott, Hall of Famer Billy Mott, is going to add blinkers. Let's just talk about Tacitus's performance through this three-year-old season, and then we'll talk about the blinkers, okay?
Sure. Well, I mean, Tacitus, you know, reeled off 3 wins in a row. He ended, his last win was in the Wood Memorial. And then, you know, in the Derby, Belmont, and Jim Dandy, the next 3 races, he ran great, but he was, you know, compromised by either tough trips, wet track, distance, and then, more importantly, he's been his own worst enemy at times. So, and that's, you know, he does have trouble beating the gate. And, you know, that's why blinkers are being added to keep his focus for number one and to have him try to break them. Because in the Jim Dandy, you know, he almost fell down. He almost threw his rider. And his race was fantastic. He was tons the best. But, you know, you're adding blinkers for the first time in a race like the Travers. You know, I'm not keen on that move. I don't really know, and neither does Mott. Mott put those blinkers on for the last 2 workouts, and he responded. I mean, but you don't know what that's going to do in a big race in a full field. Everyone saw that trip in the Jim Dandy. You know, everybody seen the second place finish in the Belmont, where you can say he ran a better race than Sir Winston but didn't win. Everybody saw his race in the Kentucky Derby, you know, where he rallied wide in the slop. He's 5-2 on the morning line. It's a full field, and he may go off at 5-2, 2-1. But is he over bet? Is that, you know, do you really want to take that short a price on a horse that is certainly the horse to beat based on his form? But he's, you know, been his own, had all these issues. Who says he can't have another issue going a mile and a quarter, you know, on a dry track in a 12-horse field, and you're going to get $6 or $7? Well, you know, that's what you have to decide if you want to, you know, bet that horse at that price.
Now, Michael, I did a little looking, and Billy Mott has put the blinkers on three-year-olds 45 times. He got four wins. He put blinkers on Good Samaritan for the Jockey Gold Club, didn't get anything. And he also put blinkers on Hofburg for the Pennsylvania Derby and got nothing. So,
That's a big, that's really big.
That's a big step. So the question is, is this a desperation move, if you will, not a move that you know works?
Well, I think, you know, this horse also reminds me a little bit like Hofburg. You know, where Hofburg has been a bit of an underachiever. You know, he's got a lot of talent, but, you know, there's something that's missing there. You know, Tacitus, like I said, you know, it's got to be 11 horses at a short price, and that stat just brought up.
Yeah.
You know, Mott has never won the trap. He's never won it. And I know he really wants to win it. I think he's trying everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think this horse frustrates him a little bit. But, you know, in the end, you're going to have to decide, do you want to take that price on a horse? And then you add the fact that that stat you just gave with blinkers, which I wasn't aware of until you said it, you know, it makes me not, you know, if being a public selector, it's going to be very hard for me to put a horse like that on top.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it's no surprise if he dusts this field. If all of a sudden everything comes together, he has a good trip, and it'd be no surprise if he won.
It's, you know, no surprise at all. And
okay.
I think this is a perfect example of when you're structuring wagers. You know, you're going to include them, but you're not, you know, I can tell you right now, I'd be hard-pressed to put this horse on top.
Okay. Let's move to the two code of honor from Shug McGahey. You know, Shug's always been high on this horse. He came out of Florida with great promise. And then, you know, Shug opts to work him up to this race rather than race him in the shape. Thinks he has him ready. What do you think of Coda? He's a rear half runner, not necessarily rear runner, but he runs in the rear half of the pack. I don't see him positioned further forward than fifth or sixth on his best, depending on the pace.
You know, I think he's a major player here. McGahey has won the Travers, I don't know, three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows how to get a horse to peak for this race. You know, he's an improving horse. His race in the Dwyer, you know, even though he beat five horses and the jock lost the whip at the 16th pole and he was wide, but he was impressive. His race in the Derby was solid at a mile and a quarter in the slop. You know, he's an improving horse with a good post. He should get a decent pace set up. The question for him, like, you know, all the others, is, you know, the mile and a quarter distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a good rider in Velasquez, who's not having the meet that we're accustomed to seeing, but he's still John Velasquez.
Yep.
And he knows how to ride him. He certainly, you know, just knows he's done well with this horse. He's ridden him quite some time. I think he's a major player, for sure.
Okay. There are three. He's 4-1. There are three horses at 6-1. Let's focus on the what should be the speed of the race, and that's the 12 Tax. And I have to tell you that I just didn't know what to do with Tax in the Jim Dandy, because I really wasn't that pleased with his Wood Memorial race. I thought in the Wood he had an absolutely perfect trip, and battled somewhat when Tacitus came to him, but really had no resistance inside the 16th.
Well, the only way I see Tax winning this race, and there's only one way, is if from post 12 he's going to gun. If he gets the lead, which I'm not sure he's going to get over Mucho Gusto, okay? I don't even think he may not even get the lead. The only way, he's not going to win this race coming from behind, and that means even chasing in second. The only way he wins this race is if he gets the lead and he can back down the pace and get a breather.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that scenario happening. I'm not saying he's not a talented horse. He surprised me when he won the Jim Dandy, but he was clearly not the best horse. I just don't see it at all from post 12 at going a mile and a quarter. I think he's a mile and a quarter horse, but I don't think in this situation from that post, he's got to be hard used early to get the lead if he wants the lead. But Mucho Gusto is quick too. So it's not a horse that I'm going to pick. I probably won't even pick him in my selection, but I will not pick him on top. That's for certain.
Okay, so... Also at 6-1, you've got Mucho Gusto to 7, Bob Baffert's late entry, and the one Owendale who has no speed.
Well, there you're talking about a tale of two different styles. Mucho Gusto ran huge in the Haskell to the best three-year-old right now, Maximum Security. He made a strong middle move. The pace quickened, and he never gave an inch. Put his head, about a head back, turning for home, and he battled tooth and nail with that rival right to the wire. And, they were eight lengths clear of the third-place finisher, and he was also bumped at the start, which made the jockey, Joe Talamo, have to use him a little bit early. And then he was wide throughout, where Maximum Security was inside setting the pace all the way. It was a great effort. It was a career best effort. And now he's stretching out to a mile and a quarter for the first time. He worked brilliantly on Monday, and that was when Baffert decided to call an audible because one of his horses, what is it, Good Magic? One of his horses who he was pointing for the Travers. Wasn't coming. So he called an audible and he put him on a plane on Tuesday. And, my feeling with Mucho Gusto is he's going to tell Talamo to ride him like how he told Bejarano to ride Arrogate when Arrogate won the Travers. I think he's going to, with a sharp break, he's going to say, hustle to the front and play catch me if you can. And that's going to take away Tax's ability to get the lead. I think he's faster than Tax if he breaks sharply and wants the front. And I think, speed is good in the Travers.
Yes.
Speed is always good. And I think that, and Baffert is even better when he ships in to to Saratoga for a graded stakes race. You have a lot of ingredients here for success. The question is not if he's good enough, because several of these look, they're all, this is not a stellar crop, but it's good, but there's a bunch that look good. It's if he does get the lead, can he back down the pace enough and carry his speed a mile and a quarter? He's definitely a major player.
I want to skip. The horses at 10 to 1 are highest honors, and looking at bikinis. The horse I'm curious about a response from you is the 11 and endorsed, the McLaughlin horse.
Well, you know, this is a extremely well-bred, lightly raced horse. I would venture to say he's probably the most lightly raced in the field with only four starts. You know, he's a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Tappet mare. It's a Godolphin homebred. You know, the last, it's third off a layoff. He's improving. He went two turns for the first time in the Curlin.
Yep.
In late July, but it was a muddy sealed track. He ran a good second, but it's a lot to ask a horse that's not, not that seasoned to now go a mile and a quarter breaking from post 11 and, you know, try to defeat more seasoned rivals. He's tactical, but I just don't know if he's quite ready to win this type of race. I'd like to see another race.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like, the verdict is still out for me on him, but he's certainly a horse that if he doesn't win the Travers, I expect him to be, you know, to run well enough to say, let's keep our eyes on him, you know, down the road this year.
Okay. Yeah, I tell you, Michael, I don't see that any of the high odds horses here, because you go from 5-2, 4-1, 6-1, 10-1, 15-1, and then 4-30-1. I mean, I don't see the field contentious outside the first five or six.
I think you can probably make it the first five.
Yeah.
Right, the first five. We didn't talk about Owendale, and I'd like to mention.
Well, yeah, let's talk about. Okay, yeah, he breaks from the one that's Brad Cox, and you know, he's a dead closer.
Right. I picked him in the Preakness. And I liked the way he was coming up to the Preakness. And he ran a very good third behind War of Will and Everfast.
Right.
And then he came back and he won the Ohio Derby. So he also is coming off a two-month layoff. And that's the question. You know, the question with him is, you know, I think he's good enough because he showed enough promise in the Preakness. The question is, you know, is he going to get the pace set up? He needs a well-timed ride and a clean trip. He's working really well at Churchill. I think he's a major player. I think he's going to come running. But, you know, he's an improving horse, and he's seasoned. And I really like Brad Cox, you know, in every situation. And he's got the rail, so he's going to save ground until he's asked to begin his rally. I think he's, you know, he's an interesting horse who will be, you know, the price that he should be. And so he's. I think the race boils down to five horses, Owendale, Tacitus, Mucho Gusto, Code of Honor, and even Endorsed. And, you know, Endorsed is the one that, you know, he's going to have to step up and really move forward. But I think he's, you know, he's a player. I'm not keen on the others. He did run well. You know, he runs well on occasion. It's Dale Romans, who's always good when you least expect him, you know, to have a horse that wins, always at a big price. But I think it boils down to those five,
okay,
in my opinion.
Okay. Michael, I want to thank you again for joining us. We appreciate it. And as always, we wish you well, and we wish you to stay healthy. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'll bring us to the end of this podcast. We'll have one more. And we're talking to a couple of folks that we hope will interest you and pique your interest for our final session of the summer. Y'all have a great racing day and be well.